Bustin' Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
This is Bustin' Loose Baseball. I'm Grant Paulson. Toby Altizer will be back in the saddle with me in due time. Producer Darris Dameron making everything sound good. I wanted to start with two Nats relievers who have helped, for the moment, stop the bleeding in the bullpen a little bit. Cole Henry, the former second-round pick out of LSU, was taken 55th overall back in 2020. And Jackson Rutledge, the former first-round pick who was moved to the bullpen this spring for the remainder of what will be his time with the Nationals. He was the 17th overall pick out of junior college in Texas when he was taken way back in 2019, but he's starting to settle in now, finally, at the major league level. Both guys are making the most of their opportunities, and in a maligned bullpen where you've got options that have proven themselves incapable, at least momentarily, Lucas Sims, Colin Poche among them, I think they got to get more opportunities, and you're finally starting to see this week that Cole Henry's pitching in higher leverage spots. He got two innings in the finale against the Orioles, two scoreless in the eighth and the ninth frames against Baltimore. And in the case of Rutledge, he too got a much higher leverage situation this week in the Orioles series. And I think you got to start giving them this shot, especially if Colin Poche is not going to pitch better than he has, if Lucas Sims is not going to prove more competent than he has. I mean, Poche came into a game, and this is where I know he's just broken. And frankly, it's where you know that right now you just can't trust him or use him, and really that he's not useful at the moment. He came in with a 7-run lead in the opening game of the series with Baltimore when the Nats out-hit the Birds 14-1 and beat them 7-zip behind Mitchell Parker, who was terrific. And Poche walked consecutive batters to start his outing. Sorry. If you can't throw the ball over the plate and trust your stuff and just throw strikes, I'm not even asking for outs or success. I'm asking for the bare minimum of throwing the ball over home plate because you have a 7-run lead and there's only so much damage that can be done with one or no runners on. Then I can't use you in games. And so you are now proving to me that I got to go in a different direction. You're rendering yourself essentially unusable. And that's where Cole Henry, who's made four appearances and pitched 4 2/3 innings and struck out 8, is going to start to get more opportunities for me. That is where Jackson Rutledge, who has pitched now 5 times to an ERA a little over 3, and in 8 innings has 12 strikeouts, is going to get more opportunities. It's not just that these two guys are pitching well at the major league level, because the samples are small enough that if you didn't like the arms, if the stuff wasn't very good, if you didn't have plans for them long term, you know, maybe you could make the case that this is a small sample, and who really cares if they've thrived? The other guys are better. But I don't think that's the case. I actually think Cole Henry, who at one point in time was the best arm in the system before injuries, was unhittable in the minor leagues, could actually be a really useful reliever for the Nationals. He is in attack mode. He goes right at guys. He pitches at an average fastball velocity of a little over 94 miles an hour with his four-seamer. He throws four seams, a lot of curveballs. You're going to get some sinkers, and he's thrown a changeup as well. Not very often, sparingly, but thrown 70 pitches so far on the season, and for the most part, it's fastball, curveball. But Cole Henry's a guy that I think is in attack mode. He is aggressive. He's in the strike zone. He's almost got, even though he's a longtime starter, a little bit of a closer look to him in the sense of he's got a little bleep you to him. And he's a guy that I have a pretty good relationship with and have interacted with in the past. He is very confident. I think he anticipates every time he pitches, hanging zeros, and he should. I mean, frankly, he's never really struggled mean, he was utterly dominant at LSU. He was magnificent in the minor leagues. The only question has ever been health. And there are some guys, if you look historically, who could not stay healthy as starters, who eventually moved to the bullpen and were able to as their careers went on. Now, he's battling with what is a very difficult challenge of having a lengthy, successful career after thoracic outlet syndrome and after the procedure that he had to remove a rib. One of the grossest pictures I've ever gotten was Cole sending me the rib in a jar after his surgery, which I probably didn't need to see. But I guess text messages don't necessarily have the sensitivity graphic over them that you have to click through to see like you would get on social media. But really, really good guy who has worked his butt off to get back healthy. And I'm just happy to see him having the success that he is. If you look at some of the metrics like hard hit percentage, obviously early going here with the strikeout rate, K rate, swing and miss, whiff, like he is able to get swings and misses in the strike zone. And that's what's impressed me most is he's had guys off balance. Again, it's only four innings. It's only, a very limited sample here, less than five frames. But to have the .6 whip, to have the eight strikeouts, I want to see more of him. The interesting thing about Cole is going to be usage, right? With his injury history, what kind of availability are we talking about? So I've asked a couple of people in the organization about this behind the scenes. It seems to me like the plan right now, based on what I'm told, is you might use him in a spot where he goes and gets you a couple batters and bails you out and could be a fireman, putting out a fire and getting you through an inning, let's say. And then he gets the day. And then the next time out, maybe you give him a little more length. So what does that look like? That could be two innings, right? So it might be inning day off, two innings, 2 days off. But that would be kind of the plan. And you don't always need him for two innings. Ideally, Mackenzie Gore goes seven or Parker goes eight. And, maybe it's a big lead and you just have him throw in the ninth or what have you. But I think that would be what they would pencil in for Cole Henry would be that, yes, you're going to have to spell him. I don't think you're going to see him going back-to-back days, certainly early at any point. So that is somewhat of a drawback in terms of him becoming a super high leverage, like setup man or closer, certainly anytime in the near future. But I think in that, if we want to call it, middle relief in air quotes, but non-closing role pitching in the seventh inning, I think you'll see inning day off, or less than inning couple of batters, and then finish a frame, so to speak, and then you'll get him a little bit more length. Maybe it's an inning and two-thirds, 2 days off, something like that. And that's actually, in this Orioles series, exactly what you saw from Cole Henry, right? I think that's kind of where they want to be. He came in two-thirds of an inning, struck out a pair, put out what was a little bit of I won't call it a fire, but some sparks after Poche started walking the yard and did his bit again. And then in the finale of the series in the loss, in a one-run deficit on a 2-1 game, he came in the eighth and pitched the two innings and he struck out four. But in that Orioles series, 2.2 innings of 6K, one walk ball, didn't allow a hit. That's the other thing, right? He's not giving up base hits right now. He has retired 14 batters and allowed just two hits on 69 pitches, a 125 average against. The other guy, though, is Rutledge. And while his results have not been quite as dominant, this is possibly a revelation here. It would be a really big deal if you developed internally a fixture in the bullpen for a long time to come. And I'm not ready to say that about Jackson Rutledge yet. But what I am willing to say right now is that it is time to get a look at him in bigger situations than we have, where mostly if the game's out of reach or, if mostly decided already a few runs in either direction in the late innings, he kind of gets some mop-up duty. He, too, has the ability to strike batters out. We've seen 12 Ks in eight innings compared to just six base hits. His average against is .207. He is huge at 6'8", and he pitches with less extension than you'd think. It's 38th percentile. He's not really over the top and releasing the ball out in front of your nose, coming right at you. But they're still playing just naturally with the height, with a heavy fastball. He throws his fastball on average at 95.3 miles an hour so far. What I have found really interesting about him as a reliever is, number one, his most used pitch so far this season is his slider. So he has no problem coming out and saying, okay, this might be my best offering, because I would have thought it would have been fastball heavy. But I'll bet you, and I haven't looked at the analytics on this, but I'll bet you it's maybe not dead zone, but a fastball that gets hit, you know, a little bit more than he'd like. That was certainly the case as a starter in the big leagues. So he's gone slider, which is 85, 86, about 29% of the time. Throws his cutter about 25% of the time, second most used pitch, and that's right around 89 miles an hour. The sinker, which is heavy, is, you know, 93, 94. It's average 94.5, and then the four-seamer above that. But he actually throws that heavy sink a little more often than the four-seamer, which I don't think you'd anticipate because he doesn't really get a lot of ground balls early on. It's probably too soon right now to make a lot out of, you know, the ground ball fly ball numbers. As an example, he was kind of middle of the pack in ground ball percentage in baseball last year, 50th percentile, but early this year, 10th percentile. But where he's thrived is chase rate, and I think that's the slider. 95th percentile chase. Whiff percentage, swings and misses, 97th percentile. Strikeouts, because he's missed so many bats, 91st percentile. And I think a lot of that comes back to the usage of the slider being up this season. In fact, the pitch that he's using more than he did last year to the greatest extent is the cutter, which he threw last year as a starter about 15% of the time, and he's throwing it now about a quarter of the time as a reliever. But the slider usage going into his last appearance had gone from, you know, about 22% to 28% on the season. And if you look at the numbers from a year ago, you say, well, you know, did his fastball not have the success he wants? Well, no, it was a 375 batting average against the fastball. The slider average against on the balls put in play was zero, and the expected batting average was 0.64. Now, in fairness, you know, we're not talking about a whole lot of opportunities. Again, I don't want to over dissect very small numbers, but it was, you know, six at bats that ended on the slider. It was eight at bats that ended on the four seamer. It was 12 at bats that ended on the sinker. But even that two seam fastball, you know, 3.33 average against. So the hits that he gave up, the loud contact that he gave up, was mostly against the fastball. You move him to the pen, the velocity's not really substantially jumping, which I would have thought maybe that it would, but, you know, that's not really what we've seen. But it is, you know, more of the breaking stuff and the cutter, and it's worked for him. But if he's going to have this type of success, then in a bullpen that has been a complete disaster in April, you're going to have to continue to elevate the opportunities and just let these guys prove to you that they can't do it, right? If you're Davey Martinez, I know you had a plan, but this is not a plan the same way C.J. Abrams at shortstop was, where he was an all-star last year and you know he's a really good player and he's going to hit for power and, you know, he's going to be a 25-35 guy in homers and steals. This is not a plan like Wooden left, Cruz and right. Or even like Jacob Young in center, who you know is a gold glove player if he got off to a slow start. It's a plan in the way of Lucas Sims, who had an ERA over 7 in Boston last year, and you think and hope he's going to be better. In the way of Poche, who was available to you at a very cheap rate because there wasn't a big market for him. So you shouldn't be married to this thing that isn't working when a lot of us kind of looked at it and said, we're not really sure that's going to work. And you know internally that the Nationals were feeling the same way. But there's a little light at the end of the tunnel here, thanks to some of the young production from the bullpen.
Hi, everybody. I'm Maury Povich. On my podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, I'm going to sit down with the icons, the stars, and the faces at the very center of today's big cultural moments. With everyone from comedians Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, Leanne Morgan, to newsmakers Don Lemon, Joy Reid, Aaron Parnas, and so many more. So join me for new episodes every week, because nothing is off limits. Great conversations. They're always on par. Follow and listen to On Par with Maury Povich wherever you get your podcasts.
And I think it goes without saying that fixing the bullpen is the number one priority for Mike Rizzo and his front office and for Davey Martinez and his field staff in the early going this season. I mean, there's just nothing else on this team that has been more of a detriment or looks like it's going to be more of an obstacle for the Nationals accomplishing their goals this season, which I think realistically means, you know, getting as close as you can to 500, winning as many games into the upper 70s as you can. Right now they sit at 11-14, which is a .440 winning percentage. If you extrapolate that out over 162, they are on pace for 71 wins, which is exactly where they've been the last couple of years. That wouldn't be good enough. And certainly, based on the expectations they set themselves externally with what they said, right, that they told everybody, we're better, we're ready to push, we're ready to win. You can't win 71 games again and call it a victory this year. And so the reason they're on pace for that they're 11-14, is this pen. You know, you could pretty easily reverse 2-3 games with a better bullpen performance and be a few games over 500. And at that point, be within 4 games or whatever in the division. Not that it's time to start looking at the division standings at this point. The other thing I would say, just while talking about, you know, letting games slip away, is there have been a few of these games at the end of series. I think about the final game against the Pirates on a getaway day where they got beat 1-0. O'Neill Cruz had a leadoff home run, I believe off Trevor Williams, if memory serves. And then they didn't score. I mean, it was just a bad offensive game where they didn't do anything. And it's one thing not to score. It's another to just have easy at-bats, you know, and not see and take pitches and grind ABs. I mean, the game against the Orioles on Thursday night was one of those where if you ran to the bathroom going into the bottom half of an inning, by the time you got back to your seat, there were 2 outs almost every single inning. You know, there was just really no time being spent at all with the Nationals hitting. And they're too easy to pitch to in a few of these games, you know, where they get blanked by the Orioles or get, you know, score the one run or whatever it is against Baltimore, no runs against the Pirates. And so if you just find a way to not give away a couple of those at-bats, to scratch out a few more quality ABs and to, you know, push those games where you get a run or two, and you steal a game. You know, we're talking about them maybe being 500 or a game below or a game above at this point. And those little margins add up. You get one of those every 2 weeks even. Let's just say you win one of those 2-1 games where you were down 1-0 in the sixth every couple of weeks. And now all of a sudden over the course of the season, it's a handful of wins difference. And now we're talking about a 72-win season where people are disappointed, becoming a 77 or 78-win season where you go into the offseason with a lot of momentum. So I don't want to just completely say that the lineup isn't a factor here, because it clearly is. But to continue the bullpen conversation, kind of the theme of the discourse here early on BLB, there are some other storylines I think worth noting here. One of which is they are inevitably going to get healthier in the rotation, right? And when that happens, what do you do? So let's start with Mike Soroka. And I think that's a good place to start, because I think he's the easiest guy to talk about. So when he's healthy, he will be a starter for them. They paid him $9 million, and they told him this offseason that they would let him start. And that's partially, I think, if not primarily, why he signed in Washington, because other teams wanted him to be a reliever mostly. He told us as much when he came on my DC show on the flagship home of the Nats, 106.7 The Fan, Grant and Danny. So he's going to be in the rotation. I got the sense in talking to somebody with the club prior to his rehab start that, assuming everything went swimmingly health-wise, this was not going to be a long buildup. They felt like he was able to throw and looked really good at the end of his rehab before they sent him out for the assignment. But, you know, 2 2/3 innings, facing 11 batters, I kind of thought maybe it might be 3-4 innings in that initial start with a little more pitch count. So they started it slow, but when he's ready, he goes back to the rotation. All right, that's a given. So when he's back, you have Mackenzie Gore, Mitch Parker and Jake Irvin, Trevor Williams, and Mike Soroka, which means now Brad Lord, presumably, would be the odd man out. You could move Lord back to the bullpen, which was the plan, where earlier in the year, initially, he had shown a little bit of promise. He had a pretty strong outing in his second appearance in the big leagues as a reliever on the road and helped them nailing down a win. So that, I think, elevates their pen a little bit, right? Because you get him back, and now you've got a trio of potential young contributors. Now, they've got to pitch well, and there's no guarantees here. But we just talked about Henry and Rutledge. You add Lord to that, who was one of their best organizational pitchers in the minor leagues last year. And all of a sudden, you got some live arms as well, because all three of those guys are going to be 95, 96. In fact, Lord was running it up 97, 98. I think he even touched some nines at one point in the spring, which is pretty stunning to me. That's not the kind of arm I think of him having. But if he's 96, 97 out of the pen, Henry can get 96 as it warms up. I think Rutledge can live there. That's enough stuff that you've added some help to that bullpen. You're also going to get a little bit healthier in your bullpen as well. Orlando Ribalta, who's currently on the injured list with a right bicep strain, and that dates back to April 13th, retroactive to the 10th, will be coming back sooner rather than later. Still strengthening up his arm, last report we got about a week ago before he had started throwing. The other guy that's hurt, who is rehabbing currently, is Zach Brixey. Brixey, you'll remember, out of Virginia Tech, got to the major leagues last season, did struggle in a very limited sample when he got to the show, but he too has put up some really big numbers, successful numbers in the minor leagues. His rehab assignment right now is going very well. 4 appearances, 6 strikeouts, a .5 whip at this point in the minor league season. And if you go back to last year, in 30 games, he had a 2.04 ERA. The year before that, in 51 games, he had a 1.76 ERA. And this isn't just pitching at A-ball, right? I mean, he was in double and triple A for the majority of that season. And in 2024, last season, when he had 35 innings and 43 strikeouts and a 130 average against, you know, he did most of that at the double and triple A levels at the high minors. So he is a guy at 25 who's ready for the big leagues and needs an opportunity. Now, you're not going to have your entire bullpen made up of guys just like Brixey and Lord and Henry and Rutledge. But my point is, you're starting to see where you create a little competition, right? You got 4 guys that are kind of in the same spot in that AAA big league undulation between the two, where if there's not a spot for everybody, okay, someone's going to excel and win and keep the job. Someone's going to get sent down. I remember right before opening day, kind of a wholesome story here, but I was at Nats Park for the rained out game that they were supposed to have against the Orioles. If you remember, they were going to play an exhibition game to finish off the spring, which would have been like 2 days before the home opener to open the season at Nats Park. And I was sitting in the dugout, and a bunch of the guys had come out to do some stretching before the game got rained out. And I just remember, I was looking at the weather in Rochester, and I was talking to Brad Lord and Jackson Rutledge, and I said, oh, it's gross right now. And I was showing them the weather, and both of those guys were kind of vying for what felt like the last spot in the bullpen. And Rutledge looked at Brad Lord and said, well, let's just stay here. Let's not go there. And he, like, puts his hand out for the most little kid hilarious high five ever. And it turned out that, you know, Lord got to stay and Rutledge had to go down, but he's back now, and I'm sure he's trying to offer up that high five again to say, let's just stay here. But I think Brixey is close. When you get Ribalta back, now Soroka comes back and Lord moves to the pen, you're going to have more options. I wouldn't want to be Colin Poche. I understand he's left-handed, and the guys I'm talking about are all right-handed, and I got to tell you, just being left-handed doesn't let you keep a gig if you're not throwing the ball over the plate. But Lucas Sims has to get it going. You know, if you are Jorge Lopez, you better start getting some outs, because, you know, if the serious narrative is what they're saying publicly, it's about winning, then you got to keep your best guys in the big leagues. I don't care if you gave somebody $2 or $3 million. Those best guys might be some of the kids I'm talking about. Another name to keep in mind here who's super interesting is Cade Cavalli. So Cade Cavalli has now pitched twice in his rehab assignments early on here, and he is, in both of those outings, and I'm just doing box score scouting because I have not seen him, although I could tell you I did get a report from him in Fredericksburg from somebody with the team. We can go through that. But Cade Cavalli has been tremendous in those two rehab starts. You can't ask for more from a guy who has not pitched since 2022 than what you've gotten through two appearances from Cavalli. And I got to say, I'm actually taken aback a little bit. Not that I was out on him or down on him or anything like that. I mean, like everybody, I'd cooled on him because he's 26. We haven't seen him in three seasons, and he's kind of been moved into a category now of whatever you get as a plus, you know, rather than expecting that he's going to be a long-term fixture and a focal point in the rotation and a contributor. But I just didn't really trust this whole, oh, he's completely fine, there's nothing going on, nothing to see here, we're just waiting, and he's not going to pitch this spring, and then he's not going to do anything, we're not going to send him out until the end of April because we want him to have the full rest of the season, we don't want to shut him down at the end of the year. I was just dubious, because I heard so many things last year publicly about, well, he's fine, he's healthy, and then behind the scenes I'm hearing, whether it's scar tissue or, I think one of the issues, honestly, from talking to a bunch of people in the know on that was, a lot of it was kind of mental. And then some of it's physical. You feel things, and it's hard for you to feel like you're 100% when you're coming back because there's certain barriers you've got to break through. And when it's been so long, it can also take a real mental toll. And I think Cade Cavalli was dealing with some of that as well last year, in addition to some of the physical. And then he was sick, and everything piled up on him. But to the Nats' credit, it seems like they were telling the truth. His arm was completely fine, that when he started throwing, he threw the ball well when we weren't watching on the backfields after everybody came back to D.C., and they've sent him out for this rehab assignment. And he threw four pitches in the strike zone, I was told, all four pitches located for strikes, and you know, was up to 99 miles an hour in his first start in Fredericksburg. He threw four innings of one-hit ball and struck out three. And then he made a five-inning outing at Harrisburg. And this was just yesterday, as we record this on Friday morning for you. So Thursday night, he pitched five innings for Double-A Harrisburg. And he only allowed two hits in a scoreless appearance where he had four strikeouts and one walk. So through nine innings, nice little sample because it's a complete game essentially. How about a complete game three-hitter with seven strikeouts and three walks for Cade Cavalli in his first two rehab starts? They're going to be very careful with him. You're going to bring him along at a snail's pace. You're going to keep building him up. But my question to you would be, what do you do with Cade Cavalli? Let's say you fast forward a month and he is now throwing, I mean, he already just threw in an ultra-efficient outing, five innings in the minors, but, you know, more pitch counts is significant. But let's say you get him up to, you know, 95 or whatever pitches, and he's still throwing really well at the minor league level. He threw 69 pitches yesterday, so you're not that far from being at 90, 95 pitches. And at that point, you're ready to go. So you'll have a decision to make. Either you could bring him up and move him to the pen, where you can better regulate late and keep down some innings, right? Some pitch totals for him moving forward this season. And I don't think that means he's a long-term reliever. In fact, it shouldn't at all. But it's just a way this season to re-indoctrinate him. Or you could do what I would do, which is move Trevor Williams to the bullpen, who is your five-and-dive starter, who's competitive and keeps them in games. But at that point, you have Cavalli in the rotation, who means more to you long-term. Williams, who signed a two-year deal, really good clubhouse guy, mensch of a human being, might not love it, but there's a role to be had there where he could be your multi-inning reliever. You know, he could be the guy that, you know, you think like Craig Stammen style, is your bridge starting pitcher. And with young arms in the rotation at that point, right? You were talking about Irvin, who ran out of gas at the end of last year. So you're not trying to tax him with seven or six plus every time he throws. You know, Parker, same thing. He's on a roll, but he's going to have plenty of, you know, five inning or so outings. Cade Cavalli, if he's making starts at that point, is not going to be a guy that you're allowing to go deep into games. There's going to be plenty of multi-inning opportunities for a quote-unquote longer starter like a Trevor Williams. So that's a decision they'd have to make. But I say this to say that there is some help coming with some of their internal younger developed options if they choose to go that route in the bullpen. And in talking to some people this week just about the state of the pitching, I think one of the things I came away most intrigued by on Cade Cavalli was, you know, what is the plan when he's ready? And I think the idea would be that he'd be in the rotation, but would they be willing to move on from Williams, at least for the moment, and put him in that middle relief role? But they're certainly very impressed with what they've seen from Cole Henry. They're very impressed with what they've seen from Jackson Rutledge. I think the only concern you would have with either of those two guys is just how you use Henry. But, you know, maybe he becomes a Sammy Solis type where he could not stay healthy as a starter. Whatever they did, they couldn't keep him available. And then you moved him to the bullpen, and he actually had a career where he went out and pitched, you know, 56 games in a season in 2018, and was one of Dusty's horses down the stretch in that 17 season where he made a ton of appearances. I think that's something maybe to monitor in terms of the young arms in-house. But the decision is made on some of these guys, right? Gore is the front of the rotation starter that you're not going to touch. Parker and Irvin are both now horses who are pitching at a level that would make it seem like they could be long-term answers in the rotation. And you've essentially committed to Soroka based on the financial and whatever kind of agreement there was that he was going to be a starter. So if everybody's healthy and available, that's 80% of the rotation. And then you sort out the rest with Williams, Cavalli, Lord, however you want to go, in whatever order. And I think you kind of prioritize it in the way of who matters the most to you long-term as a starting pitcher. And the answer is clearly Cade Cavalli. Then it would be Lord, and then it would be Williams. But sometimes they think differently on these things than I do, and they obviously, since spring training, have also talked about feeling like it's time to win, that they need to win, that they should be winning. And so they're not necessarily going to be making decisions based on, hey, Cavalli was the 22nd pick in 2020, and we think, you know, 3 years from now, if he's healthy, he could be a really good starter. So let's wear it now and let him get his feet wet in this season where we're a 75-win team or whatever. But as bad as things have been in the bullpen and as bad as they have looked, they are looking up just a little bit with some of the help on the way. Or as Mrs. Doubtfire would say, help is on the way. That's a deep cut. She's running through the restaurant. I think Pierce Brosnan, whose name is Stewart, if memory serves, is choking because they put pepper on his meat and they weren't supposed to. And I think that's right when, like, she's giving him the Heimlich and her mask falls off and everyone finds out that Robin Williams is Mrs. Doubtfire. But enough about that.